Mini episode 1681 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1681. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my great pal Ben Chu, our FDH Hoops analyst. And what we are doing is a first in the lounge because it's a first in the NBA. We are breaking down the in-season tournament championship game for 2023. We've seen this entire tournament leading up to what will be the championship game this Saturday night in Las Vegas. It is Indiana and the LA Lakers, and when you look at Indiana coming out of the East to play the Lakers, if you are Adam Silver, you must be thinking, oh, what is this, a reprise of the Y2K virus to have Indiana on the big stage against the Lakers again? But this time it's not the finals, it's the in-season tournament. The Pacers will be looking for a measure of revenge, historically speaking, for their earlier time in the NBA Finals. And to break down everything we've seen thus far and preview the championship game, my man Ben Chu. Ben, great to have you in, buddy.
I appreciate it, Rick. Let's get this party started.
Yeah, here we go. And this has been something where I've seen it described in some of the press accounts of what's happened in the tournament here, that Tyrese Halliburton has become a household name. Like, okay, let's slow down a little bit on how literally we're going to take that, because in order to really break through to all of the casuals out there takes an awful lot, as we know. But he has asserted himself as, I think most would agree at this point, probably at minimum a top 10 player in the NBA. He has been key to Indiana making it through here. And again, the fact that Miles Turner, who I think has been on the trading block for every consecutive season going back to 1862, they have kept him, and he has been an effective part of this rotation. Bruce Brown being in there as well. Buddy Hield, Benedict Mathurin, who they could be leaning on more than they are in terms of how much he's playing, 24.7 minutes per game, but he's fitting in to a tremendous degree there. Aaron Nesmith, who you said to me a couple of years ago when I was bemoaning about the Cavs taking Okoro at five, and I'm like, well, they didn't have too many other options. They couldn't have taken Halliburton because they already got two point guards. And I think you said at the time, well, they could have traded back and taken Nesmith. Well, look at him now. He's fitting in well as a backup player there in Indiana. On and on it goes. They've built something really nice. I don't know that most of us would still put them with Milwaukee and Boston and perhaps one or two other teams in the Eastern Conference, but they came out of the Eastern Conference in this one-and-done event.
Yeah, and I mean, Indiana, especially, you know, their GM Kevin Pritchard and head coach Rick Carlisle have done a fantastic job of remaking that roster, which was kind of playing towards the tail end of the Eastern Conference. And one name that you mentioned pretty much almost everyone there, Rick, but one name that you didn't mention was former Dane Flyer Obi Toppin, who's been in their starting rotation.
Yes.
He's been fantastic all season. So they essentially, just for like, because I know the Pacers, they're not on TV often.
Mm-hmm.
They only have two total nationally televised games all year. So I think a lot of people just haven't seen them play, and essentially it's a very fast-paced run-and-gun style. Their offense's efficiency rating right now is number one in the NBA, and it's really getting to the point, maybe possibly the best ever. But as we know, if you have that hyper efficient of an offense, your defense isn't great. They rank 29th overall in the league. But in terms of balance and in terms of controlling pace, the Pacers are probably one of the best teams in the league at the current moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there's nothing about this team, it's kind of hilarious that they hail from Indiana. There's nothing about this team that evokes the movie Hoosiers. you know, slow white guys doing bounce passes on the floor. I mean, like you said, they're up and down. They're a team in transition. And if there's been a rap on them, even in the tournament, even with their huge level of success, it's been that they're basically a windmill defensively at the other end of the floor. They just are outscoring teams.
Right. And again, I don't know if that hits great for postseason success and in the NBA playoffs, but when you have a short tournament form like this, if you can just outscore people, you're going to win a basketball game, because that's usually the job of a team.
Yeah.
And you know, is to outscore people. So I'm not surprised they got to this point. I was kind of surprised how well they handled that little snafu in the semifinals where the Bucks had that comeback from in the third quarter, but they are a very talented team, and they're definitely in the East an interesting team once coming to the playoff time. And it's going to be interesting to see if, let's say, they do upset the Lakers in the play-in tournament game, if the Pacers have a little bit more attention being paid to them heading into the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Oh, you got to think so. I mean, if they just the fact they made it this far, but yeah, I mean, if they win at all, they're going to. And then again, as far as glue players helping to have a team get to the next level, over the top, whatever. Bruce Brown, with everything he did in Denver and everything he's doing here, which is exactly what they threw the big money at him for.
Right, and the one impressive thing about Bruce Brown, as people tend to forget, is just his height and just his ability to get to the basket. And we all know, remember too, Rick, he was drafted in Detroit. He was a tweener. No one really knew what to do with him. And then when he got to Brooklyn and got to play some of that point forward scenario, he is definitely just a guy who can change the tempo and change the pace. And the one thing that Halliburton and this team is so well adapted is just creating offense out of set plays. And you could see in that game against Milwaukee that Halliburton found many instances in the second and the fourth quarter of creating easy shots for Toppin, creating easy shots for Nesmith, creating easy shots for Miles Turner. So again, he's the engine that runs at this point, and it's going to be really interesting to see how the Pacers decide to play this game overall, especially if, like, LeBron and the Lakers jump out early.
Yeah, and in looking at this here, again, Buddy Hield with 2.7 assists per game as well. So, you know, you look at the Pacers with Halliburton, 12.1 assists, and you think, well, how much do they really need secondary playmaking? But everybody in the league does these days. Their ball movement is really good. Like you said, Bruce Brown, ability to dish. He's a 2.8 assists per game. And with Halliburton, the 12.1 assists pops even more when you look at the 2.2 turnovers per game. The assist-to-turnover ratio is just insane. Halliburton is becoming a megastar based on the fact that not only does he get all of these assists, but he is one of the most efficient, already at age 23, one of the most efficient high-assist guys in the history of pro basketball.
Right, and I might be incorrect, Rick, but hasn't he had, like, was it now, three straight games with less than one turnover?
Yeah, I believe
and that,
so.
That, if you think about that, we haven't seen those numbers since Stockton in the 90s at that pace.
Yeah, well, you know, at that pace, as you say, again, that word works a couple of different ways. There are a number, as fast as they have a tendency to play sometimes, I mean, a lot of turnovers are supposed to be baked into the cake. And there's a fair number of guys here. Miles Turner has 3.3 per game. And you have Nesmith with 3.4 per game, which is probably what limits his minutes a little bit, notwithstanding the fact that he's got 11.0 points per game thus far and a 443 three-point percentage, really breaking through in that way. But it's a thing where for Halliburton to be able to conduct the tempo of this offense at the pace they're at and be as efficient as he is, that's the thing that is just absolutely preternatural and should be impossible.
Right, and I think, again, you saw flashes of this in Sacramento, especially in his second season. It's just when he was playing with De'Aaron Fox, De'Aaron Fox kind of has to control the ball.
Right.
To make his, to, you know, be the best version of De'Aaron Fox. And now with Indiana, he's allowed now a little bit more, you know, of that maestro sort of Magic Johnson sort of role, that he can throw these incredible passes and make all these incredible reads on the floor. And yeah, the thing is with the Pacers now is that they have a very bright future at this point. They have a lot of cap space. They have a handful of good draft picks coming up too. And Pritchard, despite his Some people would say in Portland, lack of success as a GM. He did do a really good job of building that team around Greg Oden and Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge. So he's a guy that I think is intelligent enough as a GM that can find the one or two pieces that this Pacer team needs to maybe take them over the top. And we also tend to forget, too, we haven't seen the top-level talent of Jairus Walker yet, their rookie. So a lot of people were saying if you thought the Indiana Pacers were a team that's on the up and up, you would have been called crazy. But I think, you know, craziness always changes in 4 years, so.
Well, I mean, and this is a thing where, as is always the case, you look at it through the prism of an analyst, but then also your hometown team. And wearing both lenses, basically, I've looked at it here like, whoa, my Cavs are going to have their hands full with Indiana. For the last year and a half, I've been looking at this like, this is going to be a really interesting rivalry going forward, and each team is going to be an impediment in the other team's way, not least of which because both teams are younger than Milwaukee or, to a lesser extent, Boston. These are both teams that look like they're in it for the longer haul as far as the makeup of the team. Halliburton's only 23. I mean, you look at the older players on the team. Hield is 31, but I don't know that you look at him as necessarily, you know, the most essential core part of the team, as good as he is. And then you get beyond that, and it's Turner at 27. He just seems older because he's been in trade rumors every year. And Brown at 27 of the key players here. So, yeah, they're set up for the long haul, no question about it, Ben.
Yeah. And again, too, and one thing that it seems like Halliburton's really pushing right now is the ability for him trying to recruit guys right about now.
Yeah.
If it's me, if I'm a player who's on a team where my point guard's not giving me the ball, Indiana definitely seems like a very interesting city at this point.
It's definitely
an opportunity.
Yeah, it's definitely a place that you would want to play. And when you talk about players that are a magnet for other players to come play with them, somebody that has been that for the last decade and a half plus has been LeBron James on the Lakers here. He has been a recruiter. Not his first stint in Cleveland, famously, but really Miami, then Cleveland, and then the Lakers, getting players to come play with him. And it is a better rounded out core than they had even a year ago. And that is one of the reasons that they have been able to advance here in this. We came into the season seeing, I think, still a gulf between them and Denver. And I'm not reconsidering that, notwithstanding the fact that Denver in this format didn't make it even to the quarterfinals, but the Lakers are getting the job done. Of course, you look at the big two of LeBron and Davis, and if the Pacers are a team of the future that's getting it done now, then the Lakers definitely are the team bumping the John Cena beats of my time is now, because that's basically what they're set up to be. LeBron's 39, Davis is 30. Beyond that, D'Angelo Russell, their third leading scorer, age 27. Taurean Prince, 29. I will say with Taurean Prince, it's funny because a couple weeks ago, I'm driving through the mountains of Tennessee and Kentucky and put the Cavs game on for when they were playing the Lakers. And with all due respect to, Taurean Prince, I was hearing his name a lot more out of the play-by-play announcers than I really thought I was going to through the course of a game. So he's been a guy who has impacted the game in any number of ways this season as well. Austin Reeves, the big breakout player of a year ago. Hashimura has been a key part of this as well. So the Lakers have taken the depth that they started to build last year and really sort of expanded on that, I think, through the course of this season and through the course of this tournament, Christian Wood being a key piece as well.
Right, and they got definitely some good young guys in Max Christie and Jordan Hill-Schifino that are not currently part of the rotation. But, let's just be honest, it starts and ends with LeBron. He's just doing incredible things right now at the age of 38, 39 timeline at this point, you know. That performance against New Orleans, I believe it was, 36 and 8 in less than 28 minutes. That's just insanity. And the one thing that we know about LeBron is that he's a hyper-competitive individual, and being the first to win the NBA Cup probably has to be on his list of things he'd like to accomplish before his career is over in the league. And he's just, I say the the in-season tournament is perfect for a team like the Lakers, because I don't think the Lakers are going to have much postseason success at all. But for a little bit of a run, for 4, 5, 6 games, the Lakers and LeBron are just as good as any team in the NBA.
Yeah, and that in the never-ending, I should say, debate between LeBron stands and Jordan stands, this now becomes a new weapon in the battle if LeBron wins the tournament. Oh, really? How many in-season tournaments did Jordan win in his time?
I mean, I think, too, and then this is, we'll talk about this, too, the success of the in-season tournament, how this will truly impact, you know, team success or just any, you know, again, we'll see how the Lakers perform on a championship level. I know they'll have the fans there with a huge Laker contingency in Vegas, so I'm not really super surprised they got to this point, but it feels more like LeBron's going to have to carry this team for them to win. But Anthony Davis has been playing well. I believe he's been about, he's been averaging a double-double in his last 6 games, so yeah. They definitely have the talent. It's going to be very interesting to see how they run with the Pacers. If we're using any sort of back matchups as a liability, last year they played 2 close games, both decided by 1 point. Now, albeit those were when Russell Westbrook was still a part of the Lakers, so I don't know what we can really glean from that. But these teams already kind of have a little bit of a history of competition against each other.
Yeah. And that's going to play into this as well, also, no question about it. And again, like you said, the Lakers are certainly not going to want to play at the Pacers' pace. That is something that LeBron has been trying to, really ever since he got to L.A., he's been more playing the slowdown style here. It's about preservation. It's about the long haul for him. He's made it to his age 39 season here, putting up the numbers that he's putting up. Here and again, it's funny. You mentioned the numbers that he put up against New Orleans, and I'm sure some of our younger Zoomer listeners will might be like, "Wow, those are Wemby numbers he put up there." We've come full circle, Ben.
Yeah, I know at this point. And I mean, one stat that I saw that which is absolutely insane that I saw recently was it was from Second Spectrum of his points. His expected points to going to the basket, his expected points at the basket right now is 1.46.
Wow.
Which ranks in the top 10 right now in the NBA, which if you think about it, that literally means almost every time he goes to the basket, he's making one of them out of every 2 at this
point.
Yeah,
that is incredible.
So to make a comparison, Cade Cunningham, another notable guy who attacks the basket, is doing it at a 0.7 clip. So it's just incredible.
Well, yeah, and LeBron with a 2-point field goal percentage of 626, which kind of plays along those lines there. The only one that's higher on the team in an infinitely smaller sample size, or one of the only guys, is Gabe Vincent at 714. Jackson Hayes, much smaller sample size, 735. And Jackson Hayes plays much closer to the basket anyway, so you expect that. So it's a thing where, everything that LeBron is doing here, and again, this is one of these things as well, that he's been one of these guys the last couple of years, I think, who has embraced the challenge when there's been a great young player coming into the league of having that matchup against him. Now, again, like you said, they had the close games last year against Indiana when they were more under the radar and when Halliburton was just starting to become on the tip of everybody's tongue. But I think this part of it now is going to be really, really, really fascinating, is that for LeBron, still trying to assert himself, and I don't think there are too many of us right now that believe he's still the best player in the league. He's arguably top 10, but in a universe where Jokic exists and Giannis and a couple other guys, I don't think so. But LeBron embracing the one-on-one competition, as it were, with Halliburton in a game like this, psychologically, that's going to be fascinating to watch as well.
Right, and it's going to also be very interesting to see what Darvin Ham's offensive game plan is going to be.
Yeah.
Because the Pacers are going to look to push tempo, and I know the Lakers are a more plotting team, and LeBron is more of a slowdown athlete. So it's going to be really interesting to see on both sides of the coin, if the Pacers go up early or the Lakers go up early, how both teams react to that scenario, and how ultimately, is LeBron going to do what he did very similar to New Orleans, which is try to get himself into the game early or get his teammates into the game early?
Sure. And the funny thing is, as you say that, my guess is the approach won't change much if either team pulls away early, because if you're Indiana, you just want to keep shoveling dirt on the other team and try and put them away while you can. If you're the Lakers and you take a substantial lead early on, you want to shorten the clock. It's basically like running the ball in football. So it's a thing where, from that perspective, because we know as far as running, that's just a matter of willpower. If you have the horses to do it, and Indiana does, and you decide you want to do it, chances are you're going to be able to. Either that, or you might have a lot of turnovers making it happen. But again, Indiana not especially turnover prone for the pace they play, led by Halliburton in that regard, as we mentioned earlier. But in terms of the Lakers, in terms of trying to enforce the tempo they want, if you're Darvin Ham, to follow up on what you said, what are some things you're looking to do to try and affect that outcome as far as the style being dominant?
I mean, obviously you want the pace at your own game first off. And I think you're really going to try to, at least on the offensive side, you're really going to try and focus your offense around LeBron and AD and just try and get them in that sort of mini pick and roll, try and get Miles Turner into foul trouble early. And just, it reminds me, this Lakers team kind of has shades of a team I think we both remember from the mid-80s, of the forgotten Milwaukee Bucks era.
Yeah.
To where they had Jack Sigma and Moncrief and Junior Bridgeston. You know, like, the Lakers right now are a team with one really good guy, but they have the guy who is on the outside that can make plays and get to the basket, but they also have the center that can also make plays as well.
Well, going back to that Cavs game that I was listening to on the radio down in the mountains there, as I was listening to the game, it struck me that the way that the Lakers were trying to, because you're talking about trying to attack Miles Turner, what they were trying to do with the Cavs big men, Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes really had roles to play in that regard as well. They were cycling them in an awful lot and using them to try to wear down the Cavs big men. So is this something that you would see a repeat of trying to use them in there? Not necessarily just to rack up the fouls, although that could be a role. But Christian Wood, with his offensive capabilities, he can make you work at the other end. So are there, in terms of the Lakers' quote-unquote depth of big men, is that something you see where they could have some effect trying to wear down Miles Turner?
I think they can. And it's, but again, I ultimately think the pace and tempo of this game is the real big deal. Turner is most effective, in my opinion, when he's spreading the floor, essentially, and making three-pointers and then being able to attack the basket. So it's going to be really interesting. I'm really intrigued to see what rotation that Darvin Ham decides to end up going in with his second unit, just to see how it's going to play out. Because if I had to guess right now at this time, Rick, I feel like this game is going to start out very even and then someone's going to pull away late.
Mm-hmm. So I could see that happening. And it didn't really happen in the East Final because Milwaukee was in it most of the way. It did happen in the West Final, but there were those of us that were kind of wondering what New Orleans was doing there in the first place. They were kind of playing above their heads a little bit, I thought, just in kind of making it that far. So very interesting to see. You didn't have, again, a lot of the teams that people would have thought coming in. Denver didn't even make the quarterfinals here. Philadelphia, that came down to that was sort of a murder-suicide game with the Cavs there. Cavs took the win, but Philly stayed close enough that it hurt the Cavs in the point differential. That was a memorable game. There have been some memorable games throughout this thing. Some memorable floors, to be sure, with all of these gaudy floor decorations for this, as we're seeing yet again in Vegas as this thing wraps up. So any other thoughts on the NBA doing this thing here? It does seem to, for as much as there's grousing from our good friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary and curmudgeon extraordinaire Steve Callis with the get-off-my-lawn stuff, it does seem like it was a very big success for the NBA as far as getting the fans into it and getting the attention and everything they were looking for an event like this.
Right, and the big thing for them was attendance numbers overall. It's like this was their highest attendance number for November games since at least 10 years ago.
Right.
And there might be a tweak or two, but I do agree that the four-game format seems just about right to where you're not impacting the regular season at all.
Mm-hmm.
But we might see a change in tiebreakers. We may see the courts get a little bit more chill, I would say, Rick Morris. I think chill is a good answer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and again, I'll note this too, is like they have a matchup that, you know, would they have loved Boston, LA? Of course they would have. But I think Adam Silver would much prefer the sort of matchup where you still have the marquee name and LeBron and AD and the Lakers going up against the new, young and up-and-coming team in the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, they do have that. And again, it's easy to forget this now, and this is something that Silver deserves credit for, and one of the ways where he has, for as much as everybody endlessly puts over David Stern, where Silver has done a much better job of it. It used to be the old cliche, oh, nobody starts paying attention until Christmas. Well, boy, have they solved that problem, because people have been paying attention throughout the course of this tournament. And
I'll note too, Rick, I saw some statistics from, I believe it was iSpot TV, that they, that NBA, was it the semi, the quarterfinal round had the highest rate TV ratings of the day.
Okay.
Well, so it surpassed network TV. That's how, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you can declare,
those games were being viewed at that time. So
you can declare victory off of that alone, probably.
Yeah.
And, you look at it, and the funny thing is, it's one of the most important games of the NBA season. There may be some playoff implication games down the stretch that you could put in the same breath as this one. But as far as the importance, not merely of winning this, but if you're a team like the Lakers, proving that you still got it and your run can still keep going. If you're a team like the Pacers, proving going into the actual postseason that you can get it done in a high-pressure situation. That was one of the reasons as a Cavs fan, I wanted them to be able to make at least the quarterfinals and play these games, because it's great experience for the games that are coming in April and May and June. And yet, simultaneously, what it reminds me of is, since it's the 83rd game of the season, this is simultaneously one of the most important games of the NBA season, and also something that is akin to the old Major League Baseball game at Cooperstown back in the mixed era, when the American League and the National League played the interleague games. There would be that one game at Cooperstown every year, the one interleague game, but it was an exhibition game, and it didn't count in the standings, and the statistics didn't count, or whatever. So this reminds me of that, of the Hall of Fame game that MLB used to play in the middle of the season, because this is simultaneously one of the most important games of the NBA season, and simultaneously an exhibition for statistical and standings purposes, Ben Chu.
It's an interesting scenario with that, and just in the totality of, again, too, and we obviously, the big thing right now is the money. I know the league would be very hesitant to do some of these things that analysts have discussed, including maybe a guaranteed play-in berth, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe even an additional draft pick or anything like that. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the league evolves, and I think the major question that was asked early this week is like, yes, this is great for year one, and you know, next 2 years will probably be very interesting, but when does this sort of turn into a passing fad for people?
That's a very good
point. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if that does occur or not.
Well, and that would be a thing where it's funny when you look at the competitive integrity of this thing here, because if you start getting into, oh, the winner gets awarded a draft pick. Well, I go back to, if they had played this game in the 2017-2018 regular season, and it was the Cavs and the Lakers in the finals, something tells me it would have been one of the worst games of the year for LeBron James, knowing that if the Lakers win, they get an extra draft pick.
Right, yeah. So it's gonna be interesting, but at least based on ratings and based on numbers, and also based on things I'll know too, is that there's a lot more conversation about the NBA start of the regular season. Because this is usually, many people would say, the dregs of the start of the season. It's about that time when we're at a game 15 to 25 where all of us are just wanting to fast forward to the playoffs. So
yeah. Well, my nephew,
I say the in-season tournament has done its job, and it's doing a really, and it will continuously do a really good job at, you know, helping teams be in more competitive situations and give more meaning to fans to watch these regular season games.
Absolutely. And my nephew is a good barometer on that. The fact that he's kind of tuning in for a little bit of this right now, whereas there's no way he would be at this time of the season, as is the case with any number of people. But we'll see what the implications are coming out of this, and we will reconvene shortly down the road in this season to catch up on what's happening in the NBA. A pleasure, as always, my man, Ben Chu. Thank you so much for being here, buddy.
I appreciate it, Rick, as always.
Thanks for being here, pal, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1681.